Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebray, and Marielle Smith. Join us on our writing journey. Hi, Marielle.
Hi, Lou.
How have you been this week?
I'm okay. I've been really busy, lots of work, but I'm still waking up in the morning a bit earlier than usual, and I'm writing first thing. And I even, because I hadn't planned on doing it in the weekend, but I still did it. Like, I didn't wake up at the same time, but I still woke up, no phone, first things first, cup of tea, and writing.
And do you find it difficult?
No, not at all. And I'm not writing new words. I'm revising.
Yeah,
and I get so much more done.
So is it just that you've formed a habit, so you automatically do it without thinking?
Well, I mean, the getting out of bed is not always as easy, even though it's just sometimes I'm already awake, so my body is already getting used to the new time. But still I'm like, oh my, I just don't want to get up. So I want to be at the computer at 7, and that is usually 7:05, which I don't think is that bad. I think it helps that I am now in the novel.
Yeah.
So I wake up and I go, where was I?
Yeah.
So it's like first thing on my mind, and because I don't, I don't check my email, I don't check messengers, like I just the world is not there yet for me. It's just me and my book.
That's the advantage of doing it every day as well, isn't it?
Yes. And I think I'm realizing why I was so reluctant to do it, to prioritize it like that, is because I love doing it so much that there's more, I struggle more with the fact that I can't live off writing fiction.
Yeah.
Yet. I don't know if that ever will be my life. So it's more like I start resenting the fact that I cannot spend more time on it. So that's a little struggle that I have now, but I'm determined to focus on it so much better than what I was doing. I just want to be grateful. For that.
Were you sort of inspired, mate, to plan to do the same? Not in a comparisonitis way, more in an inspired way.
Well, that is, we will talk about that. That is part of comparisonitis for me. Yeah. So you want to start writing in the morning or?
I thought my mornings are so full because it's sorting Lily out. I also try and fit in my yoga in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I try and write in an evening or during the day if I get time during the day. But most of it is in the evening. But I thought, well, I could try half an hour, 8 until 8:30. I could fit that in. And do you know how many times I've done it?
Tell me.
None.
Excellent.
Because there's just too many things in the morning. So I'd have to get up earlier, and I already get up very early. So I'm not sure that that's going to work for me.
I think the difference is that because I haven't tried this when I'm staying over with my partner or my partner's staying over with me. So when I wake up, nothing needs my immediate attention.
Yeah.
There's no kids. There's no pets. There's no partners, there's nothing. And I think that changes a lot.
Yeah. But I used to get up at 5 o'clock because I had a collie who was very, well, he kind of would bite people or dogs. So it was best to avoid people or dogs. So I got up early to walk him, and when I got back, I'd have a bit of time to fit things like that in. So I could get up at 5 o'clock again and take Lily out and then come back and fit it in.
But at what time do you go to sleep then?
Usually about 9:30.
Okay, well, that's doable.
Not at the moment, because I'm not doing that at the moment. I'm okay. Getting up about 6:30.
Okay.
At the moment.
But even like getting up at 5:30 then might help you.
Yes, yeah.
You don't have to go to 5.
Yeah.
Because that's what I like, just biologically, but just like internal clock thingy, I wake up around 7 anyway.
Yeah.
And especially now the days are getting a bit longer here. So the sun's up earlier. So that's my point. Like I tend to be kind of awake-ish around 6:30 anyway, but my alarm is now at 6:45. And I know I just have trouble going to bed early. Because yeah. I am also still used to the nighttime is my time.
Yeah.
And that's when I write. And so I try to change that. It's a thing, right? It's when you change something like that, because now all the writing guilt is gone, and I turns out I had tons of that, but then other stuff starts to pop up.
Yeah,
like so now I'm worried. You know, I don't exercise enough.
Yes.
And I was like, that was never really a worry. I think because there was too much worrying about I don't get enough writing done. So now that's sorted. My body is like, and we would like to move more. I was like, I don't know where to fit that in, though. So, consistent.
I have to go for a run. Otherwise, I don't know. I get some sort of pent-up tension that makes me want to tear down walls. So I do have to run. And because Lily was spayed on last Friday, she can't come with me anymore. Well, not in the immediate future. She'll be able to in another week, but I've had to fit it in as well as walking her, which takes as much time because she's only allowed on the lead at the moment. So yeah. I'm doing that. And then I'm also trying to fit in a run, not in the morning, I have to say. So it's been quite difficult.
Yeah, I can see that. So Lily's fine. Because I remember the last time we recorded, that was the night before.
Yes.
You were quite worried.
She did very well. I got a bit stroppy with the vet because they shaved a lot of her. And they didn't warn me about that. And I just kind of thought that they'd not treated her with the respect that she deserved. You know, I'm a bit overprotective.
What makes you say that?
Anyhow, she's done really well, but my biggest problem has been kind of containing her and following the instructions of not letting her jump, run. Well, I've not managed that because she can manage, even in a bed or on a bed, she can manage to create havoc by digging and I don't know. Anyway.
Well, she has a lot of pent-up energy as well.
She does, and it's been worse because she's only allowed lead walks, so she's not getting rid of it on walks. And she has been a bit of a nightmare, but she's healing lovely anyway. And I am desperately trying to stick to the rules because I know that if I don't, it just takes 10 times longer and is so much harder. So,
yeah. So did it affect your writing at all?
It's been a struggle to write this week. Just because it takes so much time, because I've got a supervisor. She can't just go out for a wee. I have to supervise her and make sure she's not digging up something that she shouldn't be or hurting a wound or licking anything that she shouldn't. Yeah, it has been a struggle.
Yeah.
And obviously Marcus is still recovering. So
yes, Yes.
Yeah.
He's also still at home.
He's doing fine. He's doing fine.
Mm. I'm glad. Yeah, that, like, if you have that, then getting the writing done as well.
Yeah.
Like, tricky.
I've just had to be a bit kinder to myself and not have too much the expectations have had to come down a little bit.
How do you discuss that? Because you're working on, are you working again? Because I know you were juggling your own novel and the novel you're writing with Amy at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just working on the novel I'm doing with Amy at the moment. And but Amy's okay? So fabulous to work with.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask that, because if you work with somebody else, then being kinder to yourself, you have to be working with somebody who allows you,
yeah,
to be able to be kinder to yourself when needs be. But so I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Well, she's writing a first draft as well, so of book two of the series at the moment.
Okay.
Our series are linked, but she's got like a main series that she's writing, and she's drafting the, yeah. So she's busy. She's got plenty to do. So
she's fine. Yeah, she's not waiting for you.
No, she's getting on with it.
Very good. Okay, so you already brought it up, but today we want to talk about comparisonitis, because I think that comparisonitis is like a sure recipe to get your imposter syndrome screaming at you, like from the top of its voice.
Yes.
Yeah. So you already mentioned it. How would you describe? Because I'm not sure whether everybody knows. Because for me, the first time I heard the term was on was during an episode of the Creative Pen podcast by Joanna Penn.
Yeah.
So she was kind of the person who introduced comparisonitis to me, and she has, and I have the book here. She wrote the Successful Author Mindset.
Yeah.
Which I really, it's called, the subtitle is A Handbook for Surviving the Writer's Journey. I really recommend this book. And she talks about comparisonitis in it as well. So for me, when I think comparisonitis, it always makes me think of Joanna Penn.
Well, I mentioned it to Marcus today and said, because he asked what subject we were talking about tonight. And I said, comparisonitis. And he said, what?
Okay,
what's
so
that?
So what did you tell him?
I said it's when you compare yourself to someone else, and I pointed out when he does it, which I won't do now because he might listen. And how, because Marcus is a musician, so sometimes he will say, oh, but I'm not like so and so, or I can't play guitar like so and so. So that's an example.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So for me, there is a difference between comparison and comparisonitis. Because when you add like the itis after it, that makes it kind of a disease, right?
Yeah.
So for me, comparison can be really healthy. And can be really inspiring, and can make you realize where you are on the journey. But I think for me, it becomes comparisonitis when the comparing yourself to others becomes detrimental to your mental health, to your process, to the books you're writing, because then it becomes a focus point. So, for example, I would say comparison would be, so I make most of my money through nonfiction. I know what I make per month. And then I'm in a group somewhere and I see other nonfiction authors and I'm like, oh, what are they making? That can be a very healthy, just knowing what others are doing.
Mm.
And where they have their books out, how they are marketing. Because if I see another nonfiction author in my kind of like niche genre, making much more money, I'd be really smart to look at what they're doing and see what I'm doing differently and see what maybe I can do as well or how I can tweak what I'm already doing to get similar results. For me, that's very okay. Yeah. But it would be comparisonitis for me if I go, why is that person making so much more money with their stupid books? Well, I'm making this kind of money and I'm doing everything wrong, clearly. And why do they get to be so lucky? That's a completely different energy.
So it's when you bring the emotion into it, like negative emotion into it.
Yeah. For me, definitely. And that's when I said when it's detrimental.
Yeah. Jealousy. Because
it's no longer uplifting or inspiring. Like you said, you said at the beginning, right? You said, not in a comparisonitis kind of way, I wanted to try what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I would say it's only comparisonitis when you allow your negative thoughts about, I cannot do this, and this means I'm not a real author, that, or sometimes it turns to resentment towards the author you're actually jealous of. Right. So you could also, comparisonitis would also be if you were thinking, well, you know, the only reason she can do it is because she's not taking care of anything. Like, she lives alone. She's so selfish. She's so lucky. That's the same. That's also comparisonitis. And neither has you actually focused on the work that you should be doing on your own career.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I do think that comparison, because if you don't know what you're doing, then it can feel like you're, to me anyway, it can feel like you're sort of like trying to make your way through the dark.
Yeah.
So it can be really useful to learn, okay, what are other authors making? Where are they publishing? How many words do they write per day? What are the best times for them to write? But if you use that as a sort of an inspiration, something so you can test it for yourself, that is fine.
Yeah. Or like an exploration.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I would say comparisonitis indeed when the negativity comes in.
Yeah.
Like for Marcus, it could be like he could admire a guitar player and go, oh, but I would never play like that.
Yeah.
If that doesn't bring out his, you're a no good guitar player, you won't ever achieve anything.
Yeah.
Then it's
not good enough.
Yes. If it's not leading you to think things like, I'm not good enough, I'm never going to make it, who am I?
Yeah.
I think that, so for me, that's where the line would be.
Yeah.
So do you have it? Do you suffer from comparisonitis?
No, not at all.
Because you're very enlightened in that way.
I wish I didn't suffer from it. And I can easily come out of it, but I do occasionally have knee-jerk reactions where I do suffer from it. And it's very much linked to my self-worth.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you have all the confidence in the world and you're completely cool with where you are right now and the way your process is going and how your career is developing,
yeah,
it really doesn't matter what other people are doing. So then you can look at others and go and look at them like with this sort of curious lens, this, okay, what can I learn from these people?
Yeah. Yeah, so it focuses you on what you don't have rather than what you do have or what you need to develop.
Yeah, it focuses on where you are lacking.
Yeah.
Instead of what you are achieving.
And yeah, it's kind of like all the things that we've talked about. It's very similar in that when I'm in a good place, yes, I don't suffer from it or I can very much handle it, but it's when I'm in a low mood or not such a good place that I struggle.
But that's why we wanted to discuss all of these under the umbrella of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Because that is indeed like when you are completely fine, that doesn't mean you won't have the knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
But you can have you can have a fear of failure knee-jerk reaction, a fear of success knee-jerk knee-jerk reaction. Or you can have one compare that's lovely. Don't try to say that 10 times
it's
in a row.
It's easy for you to say.
But don't compare yourself to me. But or it can be around comparisonitis, right? But I think the difference, I don't think you will ever be free of any of that. But I think that the difference is you can be in such a place that you recognize it as a knee-jerk reaction and then go okay, let's breathe. Don't be silly. I don't actually believe this about myself or my work or whatever. Yeah.
It kind of creeps up on you though, doesn't it? So you expect to maybe feel it with, I don't know, really successful authors or, the big ones. But it's not so much that because they're out there and unattainable. It's the little things, isn't it? Like people who write 2,000 words a day, every day. Or, have two podcasts.
I don't have two podcasts.
I had to drop that one in.
Not yet. I will announce it once we're ready. No, but you're right. And the thing is, it can be the whole comparing for me. It can be really freeing. Knowing that so many other people are doing it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
That can make you go so the way I'm doing it, that is great too. Yeah. But if you're only looking at the ones who are doing really well, I've had that. I have a Facebook group, the Accountable Wordsmiths. And when I just started that, it's been a few years now. When I just started that, I have these threads. Okay, so what are your goals for this week? Where are you now? What's been holding you back, et cetera, right? And at the beginning, when I just started it, only the people who were doing really well were sharing.
Yeah.
So I just got people saying, my goal for tomorrow is another 6,000 words.
Yeah.
And at one point, I had to intervene and say, this is not just a place for people who are rocking this thing. This is a place where you can see, okay, so they are doing 6,000 words a day. That is great. I'm getting 100.
Yeah.
Well, that is great, because if you didn't write anything last year or only 50, then you're still doing great. So I really had to point it out, because groups like that, and I see in many writer Facebook groups, is that a lot of the successes are being shared.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you see all these authors responding, I might as well quit. I'm never going to get here. And I'm no. They share this to be an inspiration.
Yeah.
It's not really meant. I don't think it's really meant to show people that, yay, I'm awesome and you suck.
Yeah.
But I think some people do interpreted like that. And if you're feeling low already and you don't know how to sell more books, you don't know how to get more words written per day, that does get to you.
Yeah. Or when you're already frustrated with yourself because you set all these goals for the day and didn't achieve them.
Oh yeah, I had a nice one. Not in relation to that, but where I was already feeling a bit about something. We did a podcast on an episode on how to get book reviews, and I was testing Booksprout at the time.
Yeah.
And that didn't really give me, I got some nice, really nice reviews, but not as many as I thought I would. Like, not everybody leaves a review.
Yeah.
And then the last review I got was a 3 stars on Amazon and a 2 stars on Goodreads, same person. So I was already like, I was already in this sort of like, this Booksprout thing isn't living up to my expectations. And then the last, it was sort of like an extra kick when I was already down.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn it, I shouldn't have used this. And that I really recognized before I started thinking, why did I even listen to these people telling me to use this? Because for me, that's a dangerous territory. Before my brain went there, I was like, no, you made this decision and you also got some few good reviews. So yeah. This doesn't mean your book sucks. That doesn't mean it at all. It just meant, and it was a really elaborate review as well. So, you know, once I cooled off and read it again, I just realized this person just wanted something different from the book.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't that sort of like not good enough. Why is it so hard to get this particular book sold, for example? And why are other people in the same genre with less reviews doing better than I? Like, why are they in the top of particular genres on Amazon while my book is like suffering? So I was sort of heading there and I really caught myself before I went there completely.
And the thing is, it affects your motivation, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's one of the worst things for me, is that it can affect, you know, my kind of commitment to write the next day or to put the hours in and the effort in.
Well, like I said, like the posts that I sometimes see in those Facebook groups, people saying, I might as well give up then.
Mm.
But you only think that because you just see somebody post like, I just made 6 figures. But, and this is actually something that Joanna Penn mentions in the chapter where she discusses comparisonitis in The Successful Author Mindset. She says, when you compare yourself to somebody else, you don't always, and I actually wrote a whole series on this when I first started my blog, you don't always look beyond this particular bit of information. So you know nothing about this author.
Yeah.
So if somebody tells me they write 2,000 words a day, I'm like, okay, well, maybe this person is already writing full time. Or maybe this person is married to somebody who makes enough money so they don't have to work.
Mm.
Or maybe this person has kids, both kids are now in college, and she has a part-time job. So that means that the other hours, she can focus on her writing. That's kind of, we don't always go there. We just see they are writing 2,000 words a day. Yes, but maybe they don't have 4 kids under 10.
Yeah.
And are juggling 2 part-time jobs. Well, your partner has, I don't know, like you can make the worst kind of stories up, but everybody is different.
Yeah.
And also, especially if you compare income, if somebody just made it, like, do ask, how long did it take you to get here?
Yeah.
And what are all the things that went wrong on the journey?
I'm a big believer in that most people have to put the work in to get the results.
Yeah. And not like there are lucky people.
Yeah. But it's rare, isn't it?
Yeah. But you know what the funny thing is? They often talk about J.K. Rowling as one of the lucky ones, right?
I was thinking of J.K. Rowling.
I have tons of issues about her now, which is a struggle in and of itself. But it's funny how she's called like, what's the expression? The lightning strike. What is it?
You're always doing this to me. And I never managed to come up with the expression. Is it lightning doesn't strike twice?
No, it's something with a glass. I don't know.
It's so funny that I always fail to get it.
It doesn't matter. but basically that she's like one in a million.
Yeah.
That kind of sense. Okay, that covers it. But then, of course, like, and the thing is, we do know her story. You know, we do know how poor she was and how often she was rejected and et cetera, et cetera. But we still have this sort of like, oh, but she was like this one in a million. She worked freaking hard.
Yes, she did. Yeah, yeah.
And the thing was, like, I don't know if you did you see the exhibition in the British Library?
No. Okay, I feel so I should have.
Well, the thing was, it was actually, so this was before we learned of her, how she thinks about certain things right now. So this was before that. So this was, when was it? Early 2018, I was in London. And so they had this exhibition in the library. In the British Library. I went with two friends, and it was really funny because both of them are fans of Harry Potter, but none of them are, the other two aren't writers, right? But yeah. This was really focused on how she wrote the book. So my first friend went to the exhibition within 15 minutes, went to the library, like little cafe, and just had like a coffee, and just my other friend took about an hour. And when I finally surfaced, it had been 2 hours.
Okay.
But that was because what you saw there were like the first drafts of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So you got to read her, and not her entire, but you were able to read her original first chapter.
Oh, wow. No one would read my original first chapter.
But that was, so you saw the writing process.
Yeah.
And I just sort of raveled in it. Like I loved it.
Yeah.
And so I read everything. And of course, so one of my friends is more, she also reads the books, but it's more the world. So we also went to the thing, the Harry Potter thing outside of London.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that was something that my first friend was like, oh, my God. Like we went into the forest and she clung to me because of the spiders.
Yeah.
Like that was too real for her. So she wouldn't let me go. But this was about the writing. And I was completely engrossed. And I get that for them, it's not that interesting.
Yeah.
But for me, seeing that process, I'm like, so this is how it goes for everybody. And I don't know how she got from that first chapter, which I'm not going to tell you about it, but it's so funny how she got to what she has now. So you see the decisions that have been made and why this the original book, the actual version that we know is so much better than, it was amazing.
She probably just had a good editor.
Well, of course she had, but that's like, we all need editors. But that's my point is like, we talk about her, like she just got really lucky and now she has this castle and now she can just sort of like spout her unsanitary beliefs about people. Unsavory, I should say.
And unsanitary.
Right. So that it went wrong somewhere, but I'm like, but she worked hard for this. So I don't believe one in a million, maybe, because it was picked up by readers. But that's just because it's really good.
Yeah.
And she worked really hard to get it really good.
Yes. Yeah. And wrote and wrote and wrote.
Yes. And was rejected and rejected and rejected.
Yeah.
So if you compare yourself, like for me, seeing that exhibition made it so much better to compare, because if I compare myself to the fact that I don't have, like, I for a long time I thought, like, when I have my castle in Scotland, that's success, right? I had that for a while.
Yeah.
And now I read, of course, at one point I realized, you know, I don't want that because the electricity bill.
Yes. Then you grew up.
Yes. This drafty little places. And then I moved to Cyprus. So that's also.
You want a new build.
Yes. So the thing, but seeing that, like now I don't want to compare myself to her in other ways, but just seeing her writing process, that made me go from comparisonitis to comparing.
Mm.
So that made that really healthy for me, that I can just look at Harry Potter as a series and go like, okay, so this is how it came to be. This is exactly what I'm doing with my own work.
And it's possible.
Yes, like I'm not, that doesn't mean I expect the same success, like by no way. But it means that yeah, maybe she was lucky the way it was picked up. Maybe there was a bit of luck involved there, but she also really worked hard. So I'd rather compare myself to that bit.
Do you still fall prey to comparisonitis though?
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
And like you said, not when it's going great.
Yeah.
Although I have to say it's much easier. Like I have to say, like the knee-jerk reactions to it, to when things are happening around me. It has become so much easier for me to sort of snap myself out of it and look for the learning in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I try to think. Well, it's almost a resentment sometimes.
Mm.
Like that's how it shows up for me sometimes. Like, why is this person? Why is this person more visible than I am? Like, why is this person? For example, other editors, for example, right? Like when they post on Facebook that they're booked for the entire year. I go like, why are they booked for the entire year? Why not me?
Yeah.
But then I have to tell myself, okay, well, this person is also, she was like, I know this person because they worked with particular people, which means that a lot of other people know who this person is. So she's just a little ahead of me in terms of visibility. That's fine.
Well, sometimes it's just that people want it more, don't they?
Yeah, maybe that as well. But this case, I do think there was a lot of like this particular person was very visible and then became an editor.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, so you already have like everybody already knows you. And then they're like, oh, now I want you to touch my stuff as well. But yeah, I'm also a fond believer of you get the right clients for you. So, like I said, like I don't have that. Like I remember when this person, this particular individual, started out as an editor, I was also starting out as an editor, and yeah. That made me go, like that's very lucky. Like she already has that entire network, and I have to build it from scratch.
Yeah.
But I don't really like. I respect this individual. And I also, and this is also the scarcity mindset that we sometimes have with when we write as well, is that when somebody else has success, we think it means that we don't get to have the same success, but like success is not a pie, right? It's not like
if
that one slice, then there's nothing left for me. That's not really how it goes. Like there's not, there's not only, you know, yeah, I don't know how to say it. Like it's scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
There's not enough to go around.
I think the best way you said it is success is not a pie. It's just that works for me.
Write it down somewhere. But it's true, isn't it? It's not.
Yeah, it is true.
Yeah.
So do you have triggers then, particular triggers?
Oh, that's a really, yeah, probably. Let me think about it. In the meantime, you think about yours, because I'm definitely going to bounce this question back at some point.
Well, I was thinking along the lines of like social media. because that's the...
Oh.
Because, well, I'm kind of have this fascination with people who present a life that clearly isn't true. Do you know what I mean? It's an unhealthy fascination I have that I have to look up certain people who are on my Facebook feed or sometimes not on mine, but or that I'm not friends with, but have public profiles, and they very much just present this very false lifestyle.
Do you mean like that everything is just happy, shiny?
Yeah, very posed photos. Even the kids are very posed, and it's all very wonderful and holidays and this and that and the other. And I see the fakery in it, and that almost draws me in more. I have this complete fascination with it.
I have anyone like that on my, like, I recently did a Facebook purge. So yes. I don't think anyone left. But yeah, I've never had that. I always had a friend who didn't get that because she was able to lose hours of her day in Facebook. I don't click from profile to profile. Like, I don't really care.
It's not healthy. It's not healthy. It's just occasion, and it's not, oh God, I don't do it a lot, but there are just the odd people that I think.
So how is this comparisonitis? Like, is it because you're like, you want proof that this is not what their life is really like, because that makes you feel better about your own life?
I think it's a curiosity of what's, I think that they are driven by comparisonitis, and I have a curiosity as to what's actually going on beneath the pictures and beneath the kind of fakery. It's this, I don't know.
You're being a writer.
Yes, yeah, perhaps that's what it is. I certainly don't believe what I'm seeing, because it's just... No one's life is like that. No one's life is, you know, perfect hair and makeup.
Basically, you want to scratch at the varnish.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Well, so triggers, not for me, because I, for example, I have silenced certain writing groups that do this a lot, like people sharing their figures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I silenced that, not because it triggered me, though it might trigger me more now, because when I silenced them, I was very happy that I wasn't, because I just started publishing and I wasn't making a lot of money, and I knew that was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But now I've had months in which my book sales paid for everything.
Hang on a minute. So, at one stage it was perfectly fine, and then it became not.
Yeah, I think because I tasted success.
Ah.
So I think for me, like, the money is a much more touchy subject now, because now I had a taste of what it's like. So perhaps, I silenced that group like eons ago, but because the trigger for me was seeing lots of people go, oh, I will never achieve this, I'm going to quit. Like, oh, how do you do this? I'm so jealous. That's just not energy that I enjoy. So I silenced these groups because I didn't want any of that.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind about the success sharing because I thought that was inspirational. But I got really busy telling people that they shouldn't compare because they don't know what other people's lives are like. And that just took too much of my time. But I'm wondering now, because the money has been really a touchy subject for me.
Yeah.
Because I had a few really good months around the holidays, which makes sense. And now I'm just sort of, I want the same thing. And I don't know how yet.
So you equate your success to money.
Yeah, personally, I would equate my success, like this is the fun part, right? If I'm feeling really well about myself, my success is tied to helping others, right? So then every book I sell, every email I get, every person in one of my Facebook groups who say how much my work helped them, that's what I do it for.
Yeah.
But I have been, well, I mean, the pandemic is finally getting to me. It's been a while. So yeah, I haven't been feeling my best. And then I can get really, it's the money.
Yeah.
But the funny thing, and this is something that I did want to talk about, and this is also what Joanna Penn suggests, is that the only people we should be comparing ourselves to is our past selves.
Yeah.
So this is actually the funny thing, of course. I am comparing myself to my past self, but it is becoming comparisonitis. Because I am doing like, what was I doing right then? Why is this no longer working?
Yeah.
Well, you should. Well, it would be so much more healthy if I had just been really excited about those really good months and then just used that knowledge, knowing those months are usually, you know, some people sell twice or thrice as much as they usually do around the holidays. I should just use that information and make sure that I do everything I can to have an even more successful holiday period next year.
So why don't you?
Well, can I blame the pandemic? This is the funny thing. I am working towards that. It's just really hard these days generally to enjoy things.
Yeah.
So for example, there is something that I could be enjoying. Is that what always amazes me is that I use Amazon ads, is that sometimes my ads just stop working. I don't know why they just stop working.
So you pay Amazon more money?
No, because the people that I also get less clicks, so you pay for clicks. Okay. They just, for some reason, people are no longer clicking on my ads. So that made me go, what am I doing wrong? But at the same time, I am making less money each month right now. But at the same time, I am still making, it looks, when I look at my Amazon dashboard, I'm not paying that much money anymore on advertising because people don't click as much. But so I pay, let's say right now I'm on 20% of my ad spend of last month, but I'm only about 5% under my book sales from last month. So I should be celebrating. I'm spending less money on advertising, but I'm almost making the same amount of money on books.
You should be celebrating, yeah.
Yeah, but
why aren't you?
Because of comparisonitis. No, but yeah. I am some, like when I religiously write in my gratitude journal, and this is where I write it down. But I have to say, it is harder. And I read this, my girlfriend sent me this article saying that right now, what we're in, like as a people, we're not really depressed. We're not really burned out. But we are struggling. And they call it languishing.
Yeah.
That the word for that is languishing. And I think that's what I've been having. Like I feel very much as if I'm looking at my life from the outside. And I constantly tell myself, you should be happy about this. This is wonderful. Why aren't you happier about this? It's just really hard to feel happy right now. Like I have it in moments, but it used to be more consistent.
Yeah.
I think that's just part. But yeah, that for me is definitely where the comparisonitis also with myself comes in. Like I beat myself up because I am not achieving what I achieved, let's say, last November.
Well, you're doing what Joanna Penn told you to do.
Compared myself with myself, and then I beat myself up over it. Yeah, yeah. That's excellent, isn't it?
Well, I don't think she said to beat yourself up over it, did she?
No, I'm pretty sure that's not somewhere. No, no. But I think that is just, I think that is very much part of what we're going through right now.
Yeah.
That it's just that much harder and you do need more. And that is why I do, because I sold a lot of my gratitude journals to the people in the village, in my village here in Cyprus. And a lot of them haven't started using it yet.
Yeah.
And even my partner, Andre, she started using it like 5 days ago and she had like the first copy.
Yeah.
But because it's harder right now. But that's exactly why I started on the 1st of January, and the 2nd of January is when we found all our cats dead. Not all of them, but almost all of the cats, stray cats that we looked after, dead and murdered by somebody. So all of the people in my charity who bought a journal, because
blamed you.
No. All the profits went to the charity. So a lot of them bought it.
Yeah.
They didn't start.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't. And I was like, no, I have days that I gave the day. What would you grade this day? A one, a two. That's in there. But I did it because I know, especially in these times, you do need those little pockets of happiness. And since they come less natural to me right now. So that's why I force myself to sit down and write them down, because otherwise I'm not feeling it as much.
Mm.
But yeah, in the moment, it's really hard for me to feel the excitement. It's much shorter, the sort of energy that I get. But yeah, at the same time, I'm still moving forwards. That's my point. Like I've been saying, I think I said it to you as well. It's like, if I didn't know any better, I thought I was depressed. But now I understand, oh, why? Because I'm not depressed, because I am moving forward. I'm doing lots of work right now. It's just we don't really enjoy it as much. We don't really... And that article about languishing, that was really helpful for me to sort of frame it.
So what helps you deal with comparisonitis?
Well, funnily, it is looking at my own stuff. Mm. Like, for example, so I recently hit the 10K euros.
Yeah.
On my nonfiction specifically. And that was from, I started publishing, I hit publish on the first book in August 2019. So for a brief second, I thought, I'm sharing this. And I'm sure that some people are going to say, that's nothing. And I was like, but I don't care, because when I hit publish in August 2019, if somebody told me that within the next 2 years, I would already hit 10K.
Yeah.
I would have laughed in their faces.
Yeah.
Because I had not expected that. So I do have books, especially my writing journal, my 52 weeks of writing journal, that book is incredibly successful. So for me, I didn't even know I was going to write that book when I hit publish on another book, right? I didn't even know that was going to become a book. So I do have the moments, like when I post something, they're like, ooh, other people might think. And then I'm like, that doesn't matter, because I did not expect that. That was not in my plan.
Yeah.
So for me, it's massive. And I'm very willing to be transparent about the fact that for me it's massive, even if for you it's literally nothing. Just change.
It sounds like you've also got to a place where you can go, oh, that's comparisonitis as well.
Yes, and I think that is really what you need with all of these things, right? You need the awareness, like. If you get one of those reactions, if you can tell yourself, oh, this is just this is a limiting belief, or oh, this is just my fear of failure speaking up, or oh, I think I'm self-sabotaging because I'm a little scared of success, or I'm just comparing myself in a very negative downward spirally way. I think that is what you need. You need that awareness, because that will help you snap out of it.
Yeah. For me, what helps is knowing that you're going to die. It's true. Really, I bring everything back to, but you are, when you die, none of this matters.
Well, whatever gets you through the day.
There's that. And you know, yoga with Adrienne?
Yeah.
She's there's one, I don't know whether it's in one of her meditations or within yoga, she says, you are exactly where you need to be. And I just find that so powerful.
Yeah, and that is that sort of mindfulness. That is exactly, I think. And actually, I had I started doing Reiki sessions again with my own Reiki teacher.
Yeah,
because I have been struggling with certain things, and she actually drew this card for me today. Let me look it up. Where is it?
What, have you got the card?
Well, yeah, it's on my phone actually.
So can we put that in the show notes?
Yes, I'm just looking at the cards right now. But it was about abundance and wealth. Yeah, it's called Blossoming Abundance. And it is about sowing the seeds and stuff like that. But there is another one. That might be in Dutch though. She has a... Yeah, there is one in Dutch, so I cannot share that. But it was called Birth. And it says, if you pull this card, you can have this sort of pressure to push, like to speed up the process, even if it's not yet time. This is me just translating. So it says, do not let your impatient get control over things. Everything, you need to trust the process and let everything happen in the right time, because you don't want things to happen prematurely. The becoming is vital to the process. So don't rush it. And that for me was really, so that one is in Dutch, but that was really on point for me for today, because it's been something that I've been struggling with. And that reminds me of what you just said, like you're exactly where you are. And I do practice that, but I like this, the pandemic, has thrown me off some of that trust that I usually have in the universe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I honestly, yeah. I
well, to practice mindfulness, I think that you need trust.
Yes.
Because you've got to trust that you're safe in order to not constantly be searching ahead and looking for what dangers might lie there.
Yeah, and that's, I think, if you don't feel that safety, and I think a lot of us feel unsafe right now, I think this is when stuff like comparisonitis is coming in, especially let's say you're struggling because of your work or what have you. Let's say, for example, I'm fine being on my own. But if you're single right now, I'm not, but I live on my own. If you're single right now, and that has been something you were struggling with already, then the pandemic hits and you cannot actually meet your friends and stuff like that, not even your own family, you might actually get resentful to all the people who are couples.
Yeah.
Because you start comparing yourself like, and you don't know what's going on behind those doors, behind those front doors. So maybe you shouldn't be comparing yourself to them. But in situations like this, those things. Maybe you loved being single before the pandemic happened, but when that happens and you kind of miss that sense of security, this is, I think, exactly when thoughts like this come to the fore.
Yeah,
and that's the same for me. Like if I, in moments when I trust the universe, I trust that I will sell all the books that I need to sell. I trust that I have all the clients that I need to pay all my bills. Like when I'm in that moment, nothing can touch me.
Mm.
But it's been really hard to stay.
Yeah.
They do show up, but it's harder right now to stay in those moments.
Yeah.
I would say.
So, did you have a question to leave people with, or shall I give people a question?
Or if you have one.
Well, I think that people should think about the last time they experienced comparisonitis and how it made them feel. And did they do anything to counteract it? And if they didn't, how could they have done or thought the situation differently to change things?
Becoming aware is the first step. And once you're aware, that's when you can start to learn how to nip it in the bud when it comes.
Yeah, and just think, you're going to die. Nothing matters.
Or you can think, I'm exactly where I need to be right now.
I do love that.
Alive and kicking.
I do love that. Okay, then. Bye for now.
Bye, Lou.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divinginterwriting.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.